Okay. Anytime you're ready there.
All right. Let me turn that up a little bit. And I would say welcome to Mustard Mayonnaise. I am Matt.
And I am Richard.
And we discuss things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest. Movies, DVDs, TV, video games, a little bit of tech, or depending on the lack of news, a lot of tech.
And if it sounds really weird today, it's because we're trying the full Skype experiment.
Which is hopefully just temporary.
Yep.
Because sooner or later I'll be getting a new laptop and...
That'll be sweet.
And I will hopefully then be able to fully record my end of the conversation without it having to stop 15 minutes in.
Yeah, and record more than in 10-second increments.
So it'll be a little bit more of a hassle for us, but the audio quality will hopefully be better.
Although last week's worked pretty well. I mean, it sounded great. And it was hard to edit the 15 minute increments together. But, there's no bleed over in voice because I'm here and you're at your house. So even if the editing was slightly off, you didn't notice it. It actually worked really well. It was like we were in two separate sound booths.
Yeah.
That's great.
I think that's a preferred option.
It's absolutely.
I'm assuming it's my computer, the specs on it that are preventing it from recording longer than 15 minutes without crashing. Plus, with Audacity, you get what you pay for.
Yeah.
All right, so enough about that. I don't know, I'm not sure in which order to do things. I guess we could start with movies.
Sure.
I saw 3:10 to Yuma last night.
Oh, yeah, what'd you think of that?
I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I would put it as a strong like. I did not love it.
Yeah.
But because it's a very conventional Western movie.
Yeah.
With, you know, Russell Crowe and Christian Bale, and as it turns out, Alan Tudyk, who is Wash in Firefly.
Yeah.
So I'm a sucker for anything with a Firefly cast member. It beautifully shot. It's a very, very solid film, and I don't want to damn it with faint praise, but it's a beautiful film. I think Russell Crowe and Christian Bale, especially Christian Bale, I felt did a really good job of, portraying these characters. And, you know, the knock in the reviews was that it was a good movie but had an unimpressive third act or an ending that didn't work. And I can very much see where they're coming from. Obviously, it's very hard to discuss without talking about it. I will say that as the film progressed, I really didn't know how it was going to end. It was clear that it could end in, A, B, or C, based on typical storytelling conventions, but I didn't know which it was going to be, genuinely. So I was pretty pleased about that, because, when you can see the ending coming, it really reduces your enjoyment of the film.
Yeah.
And the other comment, my wife is from Arizona, and, she comes off saying, everything they ever film in Arizona is up in Monument Valley.
It's
a small percentage of the state, and no other part of the state looks like that. But because everything is filmed there, everyone assumes that's all Arizona looks like. And she's like, actually, the stuff down by Bisbee, which is where this is set, doesn't look anything like that.
Yeah.
So she was a little cranky about that. But, I said, honey, at least they didn't shoot it in Vancouver.
Now, when I think of that movie, I definitely want to see it, but I mean, I'm sure you read the various treatises on Jeffrey Wells' site, where he...
A bit. I skipped most of it when it looked like he was good, when he was discussing the third act, and I was like, spoilers, so I kind of skimmed down, so I didn't get all of it.
Way before the movie coming out, of course, he was railing on the poster campaign, because he thought it looked like some weird high-end Helmut Newton gay chorus line thing, and it was hard for me to look at those posters without looking at him. He hated it.
I don't know. I could see.
I agreed with him, honestly.
having said something, I could see where he's coming from, but if he hadn't said anything, I never would have twigged to that.
I don't know. The first time I saw it, it just looked off to me, and I could see a little bit where he's coming from. But anyway, the thing that, but then did you see the whole mess he got in with, where he had sent that private email to the director, and then the director was so pissed off he released it, and part of the email was Jeffrey Wells quietly begging for a still image of some naked chick in the movie.
Yeah.
It was so, and to Wells' credit, he goes, well, this is out there. Well, I'm just going to let everybody read the whole damn thing and just be done with it. And which was definitely the right decision, but it was, but it's funny because now every time there's a talk back or there's any in one of his, on his website, when there's anything related to a naked gal, they'll make fun of that. But anyway, so
I saw that, but from what I recall, and again, I didn't read everything because I was trying to skim to avoid spoilers. It sounded like it wasn't that the director was pissed at him. It's that Wells had brought up a point. I can't remember what the point was that he passed on to either marketing or someone else in the studio, and then they got pissed.
Yeah.
And they were already apparently irritated with him because he was sort of mocking their marketing.
Well, they
so it didn't sound like the director was pissed at him, but maybe I'm reading that wrong.
No, you may be right. You may be right. And he basically says, this movie just didn't do it for me. And that was why, because, you know, I think they were talking about whether they were going to advertise on his site or not or whatever. But anyway, my dad saw it. He liked it. I definitely want to see it. Although at this point, it's probably going to end up being a DVD. I heard it's really violent, which is good.
Not really.
At the end. I hear towards the end, it gets violent.
It's standard Western gunplay. It's an R-rated film and it's violent, but it's certainly nothing disturbing or out of the norm.
Well, my dad and uncle saw Eastern Promises the other day, which just shows me that it's funny how Cronenberg can put out a movie that they can release wide without people realizing it's David Cronenberg, because my uncle and dad saw it and they loved it. But and there's this famous fight scene at the end that you've been hearing about of Viggo Mortensen as this Russian mobster fighting people naked in this bathhouse at the end. And my uncle said, "Man, it is the nastiest, most violent thing he ever saw."
I bet. And yeah, Cronenberg scares me.
Yeah, he's a pretty incredible director and creepy in a lot of ways. But I'm looking forward to seeing it because Cronenberg sort of pointedly, I love the Bourne Ultimatum, but he sort of pointedly doesn't like that style of super quick cut this, that, and the other. So he literally filmed this Eastern Promises as a rebuke to that in a sense. He's pointed that out. And I look forward to seeing that too because anything that gives you that visceral feel of, quote, realism. Of course, nothing's real, but that's something I get excited about.
So, yeah, I gotcha. Yep. The other irritating thing, we went to, and this is the first time I've seen a movie Saturday night in a long time.
Yeah, where'd you go?
I call it the Mervyn's Theater, but the Alderwood Stadium one.
Yeah,
where Mervyn's used to be.
Yeah, we almost went there, but we decided to see the at Valleyella and the other theater, the Mervyn's Theater.
So we show up for the 7:45 screening.
Yeah.
And of course I haven't been to a theater on Saturday in a while, and I'm a little paranoid. It's like, clearly it's not going to sell out. It's already the second week. It's not a huge blockbuster, but I'm still a little worried about crowds. Get into the auditorium. First one's there.
Yep.
You know, probably 25 minutes ahead of time.
Yep.
I was genuinely shocked. Now, eventually more people showed up, but probably no more than 50. And for a Saturday night.
Yeah.
When we got out of the theater, we went and the parking lot was only half full. And I've been in that parking lot when it's been packed and it takes you forever to get out of it. And that was shocking. And then I looked up at the marquee and I realized, well, they didn't really have of what they had that opened this week. You know, they had a
Sydney White, Good Luck Chuck, Resident Evil.
No, they didn't have any of those. They had the Nanny Diaries. And I think they had one other thing that opened this week, and it wasn't Resident Evil, and it wasn't Good Luck Chuck. So I was like, oh, well, I guess I guess that's what people are seeing.
Yeah, but even that, I was at the big theater that gets all the other ones, and we were seeing the later showing, but there was not that many people coming out of the 7:30 showings, and the film that we saw, which was opening weekend, even though it's a small release movie, there couldn't have been more than 8 people in the theater.
So I wanted to see Valley of Elah, but you know, when you're on a date with your wife, so to speak, you don't necessarily want it to be the downerest thing you can find. What's that Iraq doc out right now?
I saw that one a couple weeks ago. The no something rather.
No end in sight.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that down in the uptown about 3 weeks ago.
I think it's already gone. I really want
to
see that.
You know, didn't I see it? I think it might be playing at the Crest. But anyway, yeah, it's very, very well put together. It's a good doc.
So anyway, Valley of Elah.
Yeah, so we saw that, and it was good. It's weird. Some people loved it. Like Jeff Wells early on was just quietly calling this thing the most powerful thing, this, that, and the other. But actually in tomato readings, it's just a hair above positive. It's like 65%, which surprised me because it's definitely a good movie, but it's not there's parts, weird parts of it that you could see writing it where, you know, that, like there's this thing where this guy is, gotten a copy of the memory chip from this guy's video phone, and he slowly through the course of the movie downloading decrypting these video files so this dad can see it, and it seems like such a plot device. It seems so dumb. Charlize Theron's in it, and what's weird is she's like, It's not like they've put anything on her, but she's like almost unrecognizable. They don't have her really in makeup, but they have, you know, basic makeup, but she's effectively unrecognizable. I'm going, God damn, I keep having to remind myself it was Charlize Theron. And I, for some reason, I had thought that Susan Sarandon was a big part of this movie. She's literally in it for 2 scenes, and then she's playing the standard, you know, emoting, big-eyed Susan Sarandon that she can kind of overdo sometimes. But Tommy Lee Jones was fantastic. Charlize Theron was fantastic, and it was good. So, I mean, it wasn't great like Wells was saying, but it was good.
Cool. Well, I definitely want to see that, but like, there's some stuff coming out.
Well, I just couldn't help but thinking, though, that, you know, the director, Paul Haggis, he's the guy that wrote Million Dollar Baby, won the Oscar, then he wrote and directed Crash, won the Oscar, then last year he wrote Flags of Our Fathers, the other one, the Clint Eastwood other movie, and got
nominated. Letters from Iwo Jima.
Yeah, and he got nominated for an Oscar again, and I couldn't help but think he's sort of like the, even though I've enjoyed all of those movies, but I couldn't help but think he's sort of like the Stanley Kramer of our time. I don't know if you've ever, like Stanley Kramer in the 50s and 60s made these, at the time, the general public loved these movies as, quote, the definition of a good movie. And most critics liked them too, but then later they all sort of turned against him and decided he sort of was the prototypical good movie director, but wasn't really that good. And that's the position I see Haggis in, and I loved Crash when it came out, but you know that's the movie 10 years from now. It's going to be like they talk about Dances with Wolves now with this kind of highfalutin disdain. And in the Valley Elah, you can see a lot of his tics and a lot of his way of making a movie that is going to look good now, but not, I don't know, I don't think it's going to wear that well. But as a movie, I enjoyed it as it was. And Tommy Lee Jones, he's just such a great actor. And Charlize Theron is just fantastic. So for that reason alone, it's worth seeing. Anyway.
Cool. Did you see any other movies?
No, I haven't seen anything else.
Well, then that's it for movies.
Yeah.
At least movie reviews. We saw last weekend we popped in the DVD for Master and Commander.
Yeah.
Watched that again. Really, that's holding up well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only four or five, something like that. Years, no, less than, more than three, 4 or 5 years old. Really,
I haven't seen that since
that.
I saw it with you, and I was always, it was one of those DVDs I was always disappointed, no commentary track.
Yeah, but I mean, it was, I bought it from a friend primarily as a, I would like to enjoy my surround sound system.
Yeah, that's a killer movie for that.
Definitely. You know, and Russell Crowe, just awesome in it. Anyway, so I saw that. I borrowed For Your Consideration, but we haven't watched it yet. Maybe we'll hit that tonight.
Yeah.
What else? Oh, last week, also last weekend, I randomly saw that on one of my HD channels, Escape from New York was on.
Oh, yeah.
So I watched that while I was puttering around down here. And it was really interesting because it's definitely gained that iconic status. And as you watch it again, some things obviously hold up really well and some things really, really don't.
Yeah.
But, you know, sort of watching Kurt Russell be this anti-hero and going through, and I had sort of forgotten what happened at the end and his giant FU. And
I had
forgotten about that. I thought, you know, really, that's a pretty interesting decision to make, to have the character not at all be redeemed at the end or do anything.
Well, because he was redeeming to his personal credo. You know, that kind of thing. But, you know, that movie is funny because it was at a time when, I mean, nothing about it's plausible, but the notion, this was after, you know, New York was essentially written off. You'd go to New York, it was described as scary, and they talk about the slums thing. Nowadays, New York, of course, has had this amazing renaissance over the last decade, but in the 70s, it was just the epitome of everything that's wrong, and the thought of just walling it up, not that it's plausible, but at least as a plausible in a movie device, it seems, yeah, New York's so messed up, we'll just wall it up and create a prison out of it, which is funny because they're doing a remake. They're currently working on a remake, and I'm just trying to think about if that is going to seem even remotely plausible in any way, shape, or form, because it's a whole different era when New York is the shining jewel now, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, one of their things was, oh, the bridges in and out of Manhattan Prison Island were mined, and, you know, that was sort of a silly plot device that, you know, only now are they developing the map to get past the mines,
yeah.
And, you know, if the Duke, who I'd forgotten was Isaac Hayes, that was hysterical, you know, was that hardcore about getting out, why not just organize a, you know, sort of a column of morons and just have them walk down in one linked arm thing and set all the mines off, and once they're all set off, there you go.
Yeah.
You know, how is sacrificing a bunch of idiots not worth it? Anyway, it was interesting to watch in high def, you know, this far. When was that made, like 81?
Yeah, probably like 80 or 81.
80, 81.
Yeah, and it was, and the DVD's pretty good, because John Carpenter made, what, 5 movies with Russell Crowe, with Kurt Russell, and when Kurt Russell does the commentary tracks, he seems like he's having such a great time, and this is another one that had a good commentary track on it, but they also showed, like, this original opening of him. And it's better that they didn't use it, but it was really interesting because that was a seminal movie for me. I remember that movie very distinctly, and I watched it over and over again on cable when I was like a kid. And it's always weird to see something like that and then see 10 minutes of scenes from a movie that you never seen before. So it was kind of cool to see that. That said, it's hard for me to even judge any movies like that from that era because they're so invested in my psyche that I can't really look at them as good or bad, even though I can recognize it's a pretty creaky movie in a lot of ways.
Cool. So let's see what else we have that's movie related. I saw a blurb on Dark Horizons that as they're going forward with this Justice League movie, which is it's like basically Super Friends.
Yeah.
For those who are uninitiated, I think everybody knows Super Friends.
So is it going to be connected to the universe of any other movies?
I don't know about universe, but they have announced that they are not using Brandon Routh or Christian Bale as Batman and Superman.
That's what
which
I was
is interesting because my understanding is that both of their contracts for the main movies specifically allow for them to do a joint movie.
Unless this is a really serious one, I wouldn't want to go near that. I'd just say it's like a one-off, you know, kind of, it's a fun thing, but I don't know, it just seems weird. Unless they really come up with a really serious thought behind this Justice League thing, I would just treat it separately.
Yeah, at first I heard, like a couple of weeks ago, I heard it was going to be animated, and now I haven't heard that at all, so I guess that was wrong.
Huh.
But anyway, the other interesting thing was that right now the pre-production is based out of Seattle.
Really?
And it didn't say anything more than that line, but that really struck me by surprise.
The hell does that mean?
I know, I don't know. I don't know of any production company based here.
Well, there's a couple of small independent ones like Shadow Play or Shadow Dance or whatever, but there's no biggies.
And aside from like Cameron Crowe, who lives in Woodinville, I think. I don't even know of any major players that live here.
Yeah, I mean, there's some actor and stuff, but you're right. That's weird. I don't know what that means.
And certainly the last thing to be produced here was that series, The Fugitive.
Well, you know what was, although this would have nothing to do with it, but Paul Allen's Vulcan was making, what was the name of it? Blue Something Productions, and they made...
Oh, that sounds right.
And they made a bunch of, but that, there's no way they're involved in the Super Friends movie. They were, it was basically Jodie Patton, Paul Allen's sister, producing movies, and all they were is basically, I mean, a little bit money, and then basically throwing in some, a little bit of digital work and stuff.
Yeah. So anyway, I just found that interesting that based out of Seattle and whatever.
Yeah.
And I would be very curious to learn more about what that encompasses. If it's, you know, this just happens to be where the associate producer lives and he's making phone calls out of his home office. You know,
yeah.
That's not that exciting, but you know, if they're building sets or.
I just could not see that happening, man. I don't know what the movie is, but it screams a Vancouver, Australia, a Toronto shoot to me.
Yeah, there's no way that they're going to shoot it here. But what else did I see? Oh, I saw most of the jerky trailer for Southland Tales.
Oh yeah, I saw that too.
I couldn't. It was on the Yahoo Movies page, and the streaming wasn't smooth, and I couldn't figure out how to download it. So I'm a little irritated because I really want to look at that trailer again in a better environment. God, that film just looks so interesting.
Yeah, you just wonder though, man. That has had a hell of a history.
Yeah,
the plug was pulled. They actually showed it 2 years ago. He spent 2 years reworking the thing. You know,
talking about a troubled post-production.
Tell me about it. And it was weird because I remember all these people had signed on to this thing, which I think are in it. But when it boils right down to it, the trailer shows it as the stars being The Rock, Sean William Scott, Sarah Michelle Gellar, and basically, you know, it's not the star-studded affair that, at least I think there's probably a lot of cameos, but they didn't show them. It looks like a unique, interesting, weird movie, although The Rock has a lot of shtick, and just in the trailer alone, you're wondering, is this going to be like this way for the whole movie, and will I enjoy it or hate that? But I don't know. I enjoyed Donnie Darko so much that I'm just going to give it a pass long enough to watch the thing, but I don't know. The trailer didn't hugely actually excite me.
Well, to me, it's like, you know, something that's hugely experimental like this or non-normal, abnormal, you really want to support.
Yeah,
you know,
I
want to see more interesting movies and support, even if I end up not liking it, rather than, you know, something completely predictable.
Yeah, I totally hear you.
And you have anything else movie news related before we move on?
No, I'm just trying to think if there's any trailers we saw yesterday.
I saw another American Gangster, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
And,
I don't know. They showed I've been avoiding even the trailer, but they damn it had it in the movie. The No Country for Old Men trailer. Although I don't think it gave too much away, but it was interesting, as Wells pointed out, that No Country for Old Men has Tommy Lee Jones in it, has Josh Brolin in it, has Barry Corbin in it. All the same people in the Valley of Elah. And it was also shot by Roger Deakins, so there's a certain similarity between the two movies. But it looks good, but I'm doing everything I can to avoid every bit of knowledge about that movie. And I was like, really, oh God, here's the trailer. And I was like, kind of humming to myself and going la, 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 trying not to pay too much attention. But
hey, how's your 30-minute record limit coming?
We're at 24 minutes, so we should probably call it here in a minute or two. Okay, I'll go ahead and stop it, and then I'll start another one here. So here we go. Okay, we're now recording again.
Oh, I thought we'd have more of a gap.
Nope,
I'm watching the NFL today with the sound off, and they had a showed a slow motion line of cheerleaders doing high kicks, and I swear one of them didn't have underwear on.
Nice, nice.
Little short shorts. I would have done that between recording sessions, but you did not give me the opportunity.
Sorry, it's just a more effective piece of technology.
So one thing we completely did not talk about last week, which I think is indicative of the significance of it, was that the Emmys were last Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
I totally didn't realize that until I read something online. It's like, oh, is that today?
Yeah.
And you're like, who's hosting? And you're like, Ryan Seacrest, are you kidding me? It's like, if I'm going to watch the Emmys, usually it's for the host.
Yep.
You know, like, hey, Ellen's amusing, or Jon Stewart is great, or, you know, Gary Shandling, and I'm a Gary Shandling fan. And it's for that interaction.
Even Seacrest, from what I've read, because I saw basically nothing of it, seemed to recognize that. So a lot of his jokes early on were on the thing of, why am I doing this kind of thing? But it was, you know, it's obviously Fox, you know, trying to get their guy. But near as I can tell, it didn't really work. I mean, he's personalityless. And you need a comedian. You need somebody else. It's just, Ryan Seacrest seems like a nice enough guy, but I've
actually never watched American Idol, so I can't even make a Seacrest joke.
I just don't even understand how he's become as prominent and popular as he is, because he's just kind of bland. I don't get it. I don't get it at all. He never says anything mean. He's never this and that, but I just don't get him at all.
I agree. But anyway, so I recorded it, and then fast forwarded and skipped through it, which is, oh my God, that is the way to do award shows.
Yeah.
Even the Oscars, really. But because you, aside from just skipping the commercials, I can skip all of Seacrest, which is great. I can skip categories I could care less about.
Yep.
And it's funny because as I'm skipping through, I'm realizing, oh my God, you know, I've seen the Emmys a lot. You know, many, many years I've watched the Emmys. And I had, you know, you feel as you're going through it, gosh, I don't care about this program. But as you're skipping through it, you realize, oh, my God, 50% of these categories are miniseries related.
Yeah.
And you're like, you realize, I don't care who the director of the miniseries is.
I know, it's completely random.
I don't care about the best supporting actor, best supporting actress. And invariably, there's, you know, like maybe three miniseries the previous year. Maybe you've heard of one of them. One of them ends up being good and gets all of the awards. And you so don't care.
That's why the Oscars are so great, because it's the same damn awards. It doesn't go into this huge depth, but the Emmys and the
there you end up with like short form documentary.
But even that, it's just like one or two, and it's like everybody like, okay, there's only 20 awards. The Emmys, there's literally, and the Grammys, there's literally hundreds of them, and then they pick random ones to show up on the actual broadcast, depending on who the star of the particular thing is. Oh, Bill Clinton's got nominated for a Grammy. Let's throw him on here. And it's, and at least with the Oscars, it's like, okay, you've got these couple that nobody cares about, but then you kind of get excited because, oh, it's going to be this person's chance to talk for 20 seconds about this thing and that's it. You know, I mean, that's the Oscars have it down.
Yeah. The Oscars are definitely better. I'm more interested in watching their pomp and circumstance. So more about the Emmys. They did it in the round.
Yeah.
They had the stage in the middle,
weird.
And basically your first reaction is, oh, it's a Def Leppard concert.
Yeah.
I've been to Def Leppard concerts, and that's what it looked like.
Yeah.
And it's funny because of everyone, all the reviews I've read, only one person liked that setup. But the majority of the presenters get up there, and they immediately apologize to the people behind them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, my God. It's such a, I don't know if it's marketing the right word, but it's one of those rules where you don't set something up where you either need to explain it every 5 seconds or draw attention to it that it's different every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoever made this decision, the producer, the director, has got to be groaning every time, you know, a presenter, a comedian gets up there and draws attention to the fact that they're showing their ass to the people behind them.
Yeah. It just, I only saw clips. It just looked awful. I don't know what they were thinking.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty bad. You know, to me, it was a pretty boring show all around. You know, Lewis Black did his amusing thing, but even I thought his routine wasn't as biting as it could have been.
Yeah.
There were a couple of times when apparently they were censoring people, and I had no idea. It was like Ray Romano did a joke, and then all of a sudden they pull back, and it's like this rafters cam of sort of the whole thing. And at first I thought, oh, wow, somebody in the booth screwed up.
Yep, some sex-related joke.
And then later they did the same thing with Sally Field after she said, you know, if mothers were in charge, there wouldn't be any
goddamn
war. And I'm like, wow, you censored that?
Yeah, they did. You know, it's funny, you read a lot of the lefty blogs where they're saying, oh, they're censoring because of the war. It's like, nope, not at all. There is, it absolutely was, you know, yet more 3 years on blowback from the Janet Jackson incident. I mean,
I agree. I don't think it was politically motivated.
Yeah, but I've read a lot of blogs where you read Alternet and they're talking all about the, you know, no, you know, that was their excuse. And it's like, no, this is some guy. They're making split decisions and they were just, and it absolutely was just because of the, and of course they would have never been fined for saying goddamn.
Well, the other thing is, of course, now more attention was drawn to it because people are saying, oh, look what was censored. And anyway, I'm glad we're in a system where you can still draw attention to it.
Yeah, that's true.
And then, of course, the funniest moment was probably when actually, I would say the funniest moment for me was when they were presenting the nominees for best writers in a variety show.
That was hilarious.
And they did Conan and The Daily Show and Colbert.
It was hilarious except for when they did Letterman, because Letterman, they said, and here's funny moments from, you know, George Bush, but it was kind of, they didn't put any energy into it. They just sent a clip, but the others were hilarious.
Yeah, Conan had illegal immigrants getting on the truck as his writers, which was great.
And then,
the Daily Show with, you know, all of them hitting John, I thought that was okay. I thought the Colbert Report was great with different instances of Alberto Gonzalez saying, I don't recall.
That was. And then Bill Maher had him. It was a Larry Craig joke. It was hilarious.
The camera panning below the bathroom stalls and all the foot tapping. I thought that was great.
I thought, really...
You know, it's too bad the whole show can't be about these comedy show categories, because they are the only life in the Emmys that I feel.
And then, and of course, giving Ricky Gervais the...
That was the other highlight, was, you know, Colbert and Stewart get out there, and they do their little shtick, which honestly wasn't that funny.
No.
It was okay, but then they give the Emmy for Best Male Performance, and it's Ricky Gervais, and they say, Ricky Gervais is not here to accept this, so instead we're going to give it to our good friend Steve Carell, who then leaps up on stage, and they all leap and hug and jump, and it's hysterical.
It was hilarious.
But it's, you know, all the hoopla about The Sopranos, you know, and it's great. You could totally skip through the standing ovation. You can skip through the musical number from the Jersey Boys.
Like,
this is awesome. I so don't have to watch this. And then, you know, Sopranos gets Best Drama, and the weird one was the Best Dramatic Actor, because it wasn't Gandolfini, and it wasn't, I would have liked Hugh Laurie from House, because that's a show I enjoy, and I think he does a great job, but who actually got that? That was a weird one.
I don't remember.
And now I don't care.
And I didn't watch any of it other than on YouTube, and of course they... Some of it's on YouTube, and some they're just like, oh, we don't want YouTube having our clips, so you have to, like, hunt around for them.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah, but I didn't get a chance to watch any of it. I don't have TV and didn't really care, didn't really miss it.
And now, we're coming up on the fall season. I think some of the NBC shows start this week with The Office and Heroes. And
what was that? That was the weirdest announcement, how they're saying – NBC, you know, they've pulled the plug on iTunes for new shows. They might still have deals with Office or something, but pulled the plug on them, which is, totally great. I mean, if they want to do that, I think it's ridiculous. But then they had these big announcements last week about how it's because they have their own system and they're going to start showing NBC series, you know, free the week after. I'm thinking, is this news? Because they did this all of last year. And literally, unless there's some new website set up, I went on their website, it's the same thing. They're treating something news. It was like the reporters, and most reporters didn't even seem to comment in the articles that NBC did that all last year. That's how I saw 30 Rock last year. That's how I saw Heroes last year. I don't understand why they're treating it like it's something new, other than I think it's just reporters just, you know, rewriting press releases. It was lazy reporting as far as I could tell.
Probably. So I concur.
That said, I mean, the Office was not on it last year, and so I did have to buy it on the internets. But I definitely will see it for free if they show it for free this year.
So yeah, let's see. I don't know whether to do video games or tech first.
Just wake it up.
Well,
go tech. Go
first?
Tech.
Okay, so last night I went to between dinner and the movie, we went to the mall. So I went over to the Apple store because I feel like I'm getting real close to getting my new laptop. I'm just waiting for the new OS to be released and pre-installed.
Yep.
And I kind of looked at that, and I also picked up an iPhone again because after the price drop, I was really tempted. And now it's like, well, now there's rumors about, like we talked about last week, the new one coming out probably with more memory and also probably with GPS. And I thought, you know, that seems like a feature where it's worth waiting to get to the few, because using the Google Maps feature with the iPhone is incredible and incredibly helpful.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where you're like, wow, that's so cool. And then you think, how often do I actually need GPS and a map to figure out where I am and where I'm going? Not that often.
We have GPS. I have one of those TomToms. Actually, I had one in my company vehicle before somebody stole it last week. But let me tell you, man, you get real used to that thing. That said, it's this big box that sits on in your car, so it's not some little tiny thing, but man, you get really used to having that in your car. Let's put it that way.
Oh, well, I'm sure, but it's another one of those, I don't have a GPS system. I don't need to get one if it's included in my iPhone.
Yeah. No,
Google Maps.
Yeah, but it's not GPS though. It's you're typing in a map and then a direction it tells you. It's different in that sense.
Well, I understand, but if they have a GPS receiver in the phone, they're either A, going to release more specialized software, or B, I can make it work with Google Maps just fine.
No, I agree. I'm just saying it's not GPS. It's different.
Well, you're saying that there isn't navigation software. They do have, the rumor is that the next version of the iPhone will have a GPS receiver.
Yeah, see, that would be
a dedicated one. The current one doesn't. You can tell it where you are.
That would be sweet beyond all reason. That would be incredible.
You know, so I kind of like, well, you know what? That may be worth it enough for me to hold off and wait till that cranks through the system.
Yeah, I'd be all over that.
If my cell phone dies, because, again, it's 3 years old, I'll probably just bite the bullet and get an iPhone. But at this point, it's like, well, if I can hold off spending the money, I'll do it. Also picked up the new iPod Nano, the fatty. You know, everyone talks about how thin it is, and oh, my God, is it thin.
Really?
It's so thin. You pick it up, and you're like, it's insane that you can watch video on this.
Wow.
There's just something, it's like a disconnect. You really expect it to have more heft. And I did watch video. They had 41 seconds of the inside job pre-installed.
Yeah.
And I was amazed at how acceptable it was to watch video on a screen that small.
I don't know. I watch it all the time on my video iPod before it got stolen.
I don't think I would seek out watching an effects movie or a spectacle movie, but I could totally get how it would be acceptable to watch TV shows and like The Office and The Daily Show on an iPod Nano screen.
Well, did you hear about the people are ticked off, and I don't blame them, because apparently if you've purchased all these iPod games and iPod bought some. Well, you can buy them again for the Nano because they re-release versions of them because they had to slightly reformat them. But it doesn't matter if you bought them before, you get to buy them again. And yeah, looking at them, they're identical. There's no difference. There's no additional content, no nothing else. Seemed completely bogus to me that they would do that.
I agree. That is Apple, a giant red hot iron up the backside.
Especially considering they're not really very, I mean, it's not a huge revenue generator. It shouldn't have made that big of a deal for them just to, I don't know. Anyway, it just seemed unfair.
Yeah, and that's one where it seems like, well, again, maybe it actually is a licensing issue with the creator of the games. Like, if it's Bejeweled, their deal with whoever makes Bejeweled, I don't know if it's PopCap Games or someone else, you know, anytime you put it on, you know, what's the definition of a new device?
Yeah, it could
be. You need to relicense it, and that means they need to get revenue for it. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, it could be.
You never know. But then you look at stuff like there's a lot going back and forth about, you know, ringtones and Apple charging you again for the same song you already have and how ridiculous that is. And people saying, oh, no, well, that's the labels, you know, having that requirement. And then saying, well, look at how Verizon or Sprint does it, where you really only have it for 3 months, 6 months, and how completely, you know, what a complete screw job that is. You know, and looking at, you know, these programs that are already out there that let you do ringtones for free. And, you know, is it or is it not going to be stripped when they do the next firmware update? Or will, you know, will they break that and all the drama surrounding that? And, you know, I look at this and you really have to think that whatever their plans, whatever Apple's plans were in terms of letting people develop applications from the iPhone, I don't know if they thought, you know what, we'll do our own for a year, get a feel for it, and then release a development kit so others can do it, or if they thought this is buttoned up enough that it won't be an issue for a while.
Yeah.
I think the rate of, you know, it seems like the rate of acceleration on other people developing applications is really high, and they need to address this sooner rather than later and saying, you know what, our plan was to release an SDK in a year, you know what, we'll do it in a month, just be patient, or come out with a firm statement and saying, if you run these things on your iPhone, we're not going to stop you, but you're also definitely breaking the warranty.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
There was a thing just last week where they were, you know, some guy went into an Apple store to get some stuff replaced, and they said, oh, well, you've done this with it, you've broken the warranty. And apparently that was the first time that that had come up. And people, you know, everyone's dying to hack their iPhones and either unlock it so it's not attached to Singular or put new applications on it.
Well, what sucks is they're talking about, okay, so these people that have come up with these software hacks where you can put a new SIM card or whatever, and they're saying, okay, but the Apple company may have a, you know, when you do an update, it may brick your phone for you and you violated that. Well, but this is murky gray legal water. They changed the law 2 years ago that specifically allowed people to be able to use different carriers in their phones. And I would not be surprised if Apple started bricking people's phones, if there was a class action lawsuit because they can make all the technical hurdles they want, but legally the law says you should be able to utilize another carrier in your phone. Now the downside,
that is a pretty, the whole exclusive with AT&T thing has got to be the fact that they're, I'm completely unfamiliar with that law. So to me, it's how can you have gone this far and had an exclusivity agreement without fully have had your, you know, without setting the lawyers on that and figuring out your situation.
Well, I'm sure they have, but I'm sure they figured they said it was a technical thing. And by the same token, you can do the basic functionalities, but a lot of the cool stuff with the iPhone is dependent on that network. So it's basically the only thing you're allowed to do is make calls.
Well, you say that, but listening to This Week in Tech and MacBreak Weekly and those guys, it really sounds like it's a visual voicemail that's dependent on the AT&T network. And also to, what was the other one? I think the ability to use Yahoo as a push emailer, something about the IMAP system. But it sounded like really that was it.
Yeah. Well, here's law.com. Copyright law gives mobile users new freedom with legally unlocked cell phones. It says the provision. Let's see. By placing software locks on mobile phones, a provider of telecommunications network could effectively prevent a user from switching to a mobile phone. However, the DMCA has a new provision that specifically, well, I don't want to go into the details, but it specifically allows people to go around that. And it says, yeah. Anyway, so basically, they're saying that you can legally go around it, but they can keep putting really hard software locks on it, and that's their protection, basically.
Well, I unfortunately, I just have nothing to add. I don't feel like I know enough to. But God, you hold the iPhone, and you really want one.
Yeah, I hear you.
They have definitely engineered the nerd lust that I need. I need it. God, what else? Oh, I picked up an iPod Touch, and you get so sick of people saying the exact same thing about it, but it really is quite thin.
Yeah.
That being said, between the iPod Touch and the iPod phone,
Hang on, I just found this is in the Seattle PI, November 28th of last year. It says, a ruling of the U.S. Copyright Office went in effect Monday now allows cell phone users to legally break the software, quote, lock placed on their cell phones and move their phone from one carrier to another. The ruler does not prevent cellular companies from locking a phone, but if a consumer unlocks it, he wouldn't be in violation of copyright infringement. So basically they're saying you can unlock it. That said, is there anything to prevent Apple from saying, well, we're going to brick other features because you've chosen to unlock this one feature? That's why I think it's all up in the air. But legally, people are not violating the law by putting a different SIM card and getting it to work, near as I can tell. Anyway, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. You're talking about the iPhone.
Yeah, I was just going to end up repeating what we said last week. I would rather, for me, it's more valuable to have the phone functionality and get rid of the second thing in my pocket.
Yeah.
Rather than having a thinner unit.
Yeah, I totally agree. I just want that hard drive in there, man.
It's not, I think it's not going to happen. If they're going to do it, they already wouldn't have.
Why would they not do that? Is it because it's
power? I'm guessing it's all power.
You're right.
And then saying, it's kind of like when they say, you know what, from now on, we're just doing LCD screens in our desktops. We're done with CRTs.
Yeah.
They just made this decision that the future is this, and we're done with this other thing.
That's true. And as long as they can get 32 megs in there, I'll be happy. But this 8 meg, that's just ridiculous. So.
Gig.
Yeah, gig. I'm sorry, meg.
All right. So, Halo 3.
Yep, comes out. Was it
comes out
Tuesday?
On Tuesday.
And I'll be at my local 7-Eleven buying it.
7-Eleven.
That's the place where to buy them without having to pre-order it, and I guarantee you'll find them probably in most 7-Elevens.
I've got a more convoluted plan. Apparently, because I have friends at Microsoft, this is the first time that a game is going to be available in the Microsoft Store day of release.
Yeah.
Like they made a big deal. Apparently they even brought it up at the big staff meeting they have at Safeco Field. And so, you know, I'm emailing back and forth with my friends and trying to ascertain the likelihood of my ability of actually having them pick one up for me.
Yeah.
Because what they have there is games that the internal game studio produce. So, like, Project Gotham Racing is an internal title, Forza, Crackdown, but, like, not a game that wouldn't be included in that would be Bioshock.
Yep.
So, and they're essentially $25, which is less than 60.
Yep.
And so it's worth it for me to try and get a buddy to say, okay, can you pick this game up for me? On the other hand, you know, he's, of course, insanely busy, and it's like, well, I don't want you to go there just for me and have to wait in maybe a ridiculously long line just to pick me up a game. Because then I'd feel really guilty about that. So it's like, well, if you can do it, great. If not, I'm going to hit Costco on the way home. Yeah, because unfortunately, I'm psyched up enough that I really want it day of. I want it Tuesday. even though there isn't a tremendous functional difference between my getting it Tuesday or getting it Wednesday.
Yep.
They have done enough work that I want it Tuesday. I don't want it bad enough to wait in line Monday night at midnight.
I just don't. I'll get it, but I honestly, I'm not. I don't really care that much. And plus, if I wait a couple days, then the first walkthroughs will be out online, and it'll make it that much easier for me. Although Halo is not the kind of thing that a walkthrough really much matters for. But
not really.
So,
yeah, and it's. I actually had I had a can of Game Fuel the other day.
Oh my God!
You know what? It wasn't that bad, honestly. I thought it tasted okay, and I had heard it was vile. I didn't feel it was vile. I'm not going to go out of my way to find it because I'm not into the drinks with all the sugar and caffeine. But I didn't think it was that bad, really.
Well, I like Diet Pepsi, Diet Coke, or whatever, and I started buying that Pepsi Max just because I thought, oh, it's like Coke Zero or whatever. I didn't realize it's like more caffeine and ginseng or something than the regular Diet Pepsi. All I know is it tastes great. I love it. It's my favorite one. It's the only one I buy. And they put some additional crap in it, but I can't stand the sugar, so I just get it for that. But you get me wired on caffeine, I'm happy, and that's what's in it. I'll just extra caffeine.
And it's, you know, I've sort of been, yesterday I downloaded through Xbox Live a bunch of their Halo 3 materials, you know, the commercials and some of
I did like that last one, the two old guys revisiting. You seen that one?
I haven't seen the two old guys. I saw the first in the series. I went back and rewatched that first arms race thing that Peter Jackson did for them.
Yeah.
That's pretty, and it made me want to, because I know that they've done others, and I think the second one was out on YouTube, but I haven't seen it on Xbox Live, and I'd rather see it on my big screen than on a little YouTube window.
Yeah. Here, I'm gonna stop and start again here real quick. Hang in a second. Start. Yeah, they had the latest and last one. It's sort of, it's like taking place like 40, 50 years after the wars, and it's two guys in a museum, old guys, and they're looking at some of the hardware that they used back in their old military days, and they're picking up like brood weaponry and stuff, and it's actually pretty effective. It's pretty well done.
Yeah, it'll be. It's interesting because they're talking. God, who was it? I don't know. So I don't. Somebody I read or was listening to was talking about how the campaign is really. It's geared towards people that maybe haven't thought about it yet. Because clearly gamers all are aware of it, and they've already. And I'm sure most, you know, if you have an Xbox, you're probably going to get it.
Yeah.
I actually have friends that have said, "I'm not getting it. I don't care."
Yeah.
Which I don't understand them at all.
Well, let's put it this way: I'm getting it, but I honestly care about as much as I do most other games. I'm not that intrigued by it. I mean, I'm pretty intrigued by it. I would lump Halo and Halo 2. I would say they were in the B level of the games. They're definitely not Half-Life 2.
See, but for me, it's that having never really gotten into PC shooters, not having a PC,
yeah,
it was the first real first-person shooter that I felt I was good at.
Yeah.
And because of that, I've got this connection to it that I really enjoy it.
Yeah,
and
I hear you.
I'm totally into it.
Having read more about Mass Effect, I'm definitely looking forward to that, especially when they're describing it as 40 hours of really solid gameplay, not boring gameplay. But
I listened to the podcast for the Penny Arcade guys last week, and it was, which is essentially, it's as they go through the ideas of creating a strip.
Yep.
And so their podcast last week was for creating the strip about the Mass Effect sex scene.
Oh.
And the fact that it was potentially girl-on-girl.
Nice.
And listening to these two idiots, and I say idiots in the, like, we're two idiots sense of the word, listening to these two guys talk about boobs, and one of them, as they're trying to come up with this really disgusting description of an alien, you know, not titillating or exciting at all. And as they do it, one of them references the Onion story about the bear raping the zookeeper. which I remember reading and being horrified at, and yet it was hysterical. And so basically one of them rereads the story to the other on the podcast. They go to the site and find the story, and I could not listen to it at work. It was so funny. I had to stop it because I was literally, you know, because I worked in a room with 10 other people, you know, and we're usually listening to headphones. I was literally going,
yeah.
I'm trying not to draw attention to myself as being retarded, and I had to stop it about 3 times. I could not get through the podcast. It was so funny.
Hilarious.
And then 2 weeks, and my boss is out of town next week, so I kind of have to be a little more with it, and yet I will, I'm sure, be playing Halo into the wee hours of the morning all week. It's going to be rough.
Yeah. I'm still way ahead of you, dude. I'm like 100... What? No.
Oh, that's the other thing I wanted to talk to you about. I'm officially done as an achievement whore.
Really?
I no longer care about trying. If it's a low hanging fruit achievement, I will expend 5-10 minutes to get it.
Is it because I've run you into the ground with achievements?
No. It's because I'm investing too much in trying to get them.
Oh, I love achievements, but I agree totally. I sat down and played through BioShock again just so I could get the little audio diary achievement. And it was like I played longer that one than I did the first time around just for these 50 frickin' points.
Well, and I'm borrowing my copy from a friend, and I decided I'm going to go through a normal difficulty. I know there's an achievement for hard difficulty, yeah, but I don't care about that. And as I went through, I tried, okay, hopefully I'll collect all the audio diaries. Hopefully I'll collect all the tonics. Hopefully I'll upgrade all the weapons and take all the pictures. And I get to the end, and I have not fully researched the Big Daddy,
yeah,
one of the Big Daddies. I was like, okay. So yesterday I grabbed a save point from right before the final fight, and I went back to some of the levels and tried to take pictures of the Big Daddies. And what was the other thing? I hadn't there was one weapon upgrade I was missing. And it turns out it was in Fort Frolic. You go behind the bar and you push a button.
Hang on just a second, dude. I'm gonna pause this. Hang on just a second. Okay, we're back. We're recording once again.
So, but before I go forth with my BioShock story, I was just watching this new Nike commercial that they've got running during football games.
Yep.
And they've taken Sean Merriman, which is a defensive player on the Chargers, making a bunch of plays, you know, through, and they've cut it together so it's sort of like merging into one. Different games, also emerging into well with different weather conditions, and they put the one of the audio tracks from Last of the Mohicans during that sort of climactic chase and battle.
Yep.
They put this violin track to it. It's an amazing commercial. Well done and so well cut together. It makes you want to listen to that soundtrack again. Anyway, it's incredibly well done.
Cool.
So, yeah, I needed this, as I talk about BioShock again, you go behind the bar and you push this button and this grate opens up and you go into this bottom room and that's where the missing thing was.
Yeah.
Well, I went there and I pushed the button and the grate didn't retract. There's like a bug in the code. And I tried freezing it and banging on it and shooting it and all my weapons on it and this grate won't go away. I go back, the button is no longer an actionable item.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny, I told you I had the bug where one of the little sisters just wouldn't show up. So I'd literally play the whole game again just so I could get that. And then also, I'm pretty certain I have fully researched everything, including the robots, the drone bots.
Cameras and the turrets.
Exactly. Yeah. And I researched all those where the point where it tells me no longer research, fully research, yet I don't have the full PhD research upgrade. So I think there's like a lot of little bugs and it's like kind of disappointing, you know?
Yeah. As I'm taking pictures of the Big Daddy yesterday, there was a point when I took 2 pictures and it does this thing where it kind of stops and shows you the picture and then gives you a grade.
Yep.
Well, it showed me the picture and then didn't give me a grade for 2 of them. And then the next one I shot said, you know, score 2. I think it said fully researched. And I was like, well, no, wait a minute. No, it's not, because I didn't get the achievement.
Yeah.
And I said, you know
but
what?
Did you,
I've already spent...
But it's put you back in time, does it? Because at that point...
No, because save point right before the end boss.
Yeah. So,
and then I took the time to travel around with the bathysphere to the other levels where there were big daddies roaming around with nothing to do.
Well, that's what I did too, you know, and I was trying to build up achievements at a certain point. And it's weird because that game, which seems so immersive and so huge, once you start jumping around the bathyspheres and know everything, you just fly through it. It actually comes across as quite small little world later on as you're going through it and you just kind of learn everything.
Well, because as you're going around, there's an aspect to it where pretty much people are leaving you alone, and not having to fight everyone as you go through it makes a big difference.
Well, not even just that, especially if you like I went through and I stopped. I stopped just as I put on. I didn't know if it helped for power or not, but I just thought, fuck it, I'll travel through with the Big Daddy suit on, just to see if it made me more powerful.
Oh, retroactive spoiler.
Oh, sorry. So I so I went through with that. And I don't know if it was that or the other, but it was weird to have all these guys ignore you. You'd walk right up to them and you'd follow them doing their thing. But there wasn't enough of them. It was like, dang, I was trying to invent stuff and I just was spending hours, you know, I spent like 4 hours looking for things to kill so I could get the parts to invent. And I never got to it. I was trying to reach that 100 and I just like,
I didn't get that one.
I was kind of like, I give up.
There was that point yesterday when I was like, you know what? I thought these were going to be low-hanging fruit. I thought it would take me 10 minutes of some pictures, and I would, at the same time, fully research the bouncer and then get the PhD.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, I'll do that. And then it didn't happen. I was like, you know what? I'm done.
Yeah.
And also contributing to that was the Lego Star Wars.
Yeah, I've still been looking for that.
I'm trying to, you know, there's a point where you can buy a character that's one of the Force ghosts, so you could buy Ben Kenobi as a ghost.
Yep.
And so he can't die unless you fall, which there are ample opportunities to, but there are achievements for going through a level undefeated without dying.
Yep.
And so I'm trying to go through these. But the way the game works, you've got a second character following you around, and I forgot that if they fall or if they die, you don't get the achievement.
Yep.
And so I would just try and, you know, I got home Friday and tried to burn through doing a level undefeated. And either I kept falling or my little guy, my AI-controlled partner kept falling. And I just thought, you know what? The only reason I'm doing this is for the achievement. And it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I put like an hour and a half into this. And if I'm going to put an hour and a half into video games with so many things in my life that I should be doing, I shouldn't be wasting it on chasing achievement.
Yeah.
And so I just decided, you know what? I don't care if my fine friend Richard is ahead of me and rubbing it in at every point.
It's
no longer worth my time to chase them.
Yeah.
So, you know, like when Halo comes out, I'll go through it and try to get as many as possible, but I'm not going to devote, you know,
well, I don't know. Some games,
like
with Gears of War, I just could care less about achievements. I just wanted to get through the dang thing. But other games, I mean, Biosphere, I liked their achievements, so I did work on it. But, yeah, I agree with you. It's painful.
Well, it's, you know, and it's so insidious because it preys on that, you know, collect them all mentality, which a lot of males have, you know, which expressed through the years in terms of baseball cards or comic books or something where there's a numbered series where, you know, you just get this ridiculous little endorphin rush from collecting all of something.
Yeah.
Whether or not you enjoy them after you've collected them is beside the point. It's partly the chase.
Absolutely.
And so that's where this achievement system is so insidious, because it's not only is it a collect them all mentality, it's a compare with your friends in a very easy to do way.
Yeah.
And oh my God, it's a brilliant system, and I hate it because it's so brilliant, and it's such a, you know, it's so compelling to, if I just do this one more thing, I can get an achievement. If I just do this, if I just do that, and I really need to throw off the shackles of that system. Anyway, I know we're getting to the point where you need to leave, but you wanted to talk about, you had read some first-person reviews of the Red camera.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't read them. I was listening to the FX podcast where they were, because this is a real high-end podcast where they're technical people, and they were shooting with it, and they were pointing out that, you know, it was very interesting because they were shooting with it and using it in production, and they were going, God, we're like literally among the first people in the whole world that are doing this as they're realizing their process. And they were marveling at the fact that there's no telecine route where you're filming and then converting it. It's straight there. And there was a lot of goofy things that working on, but they were just stunned and blown away. So all of the talk about this machine is they're just basically saying it's true. It's just incredible. And when you talk about the resolution, I'm like looking at my very, very high resolution, a laptop screen here. It's like the highest resolution you get on a laptop screen. And that, the resolution for that picture is like three times better than this screen. You know, I need three of these screens lined up with each pixel being different to get what that red camera is pumping out. I mean, it's really an awesome, awesome machine. So the big challenge is, they're saying, is it's all the workflow. You have a different way of workflow because of the massive amounts of data and how to edit it and get it in. It's just, that's the hard part. But it seemed interesting. The other thing I was going to mention was today is the 30th anniversary of the Fonzie jumping the shark on Happy Days, which is the famous incident that caused that guy John Hine to create the website jumptheshark.com and stuff. What I was interested when I heard this was that first of all, Jump the Shark, it was a season ending thing that was resolved, you know, one of those cliffhangers at the end of the year thing. And which meant this was the opening of the 1977 season. Well, the Happy Days was only on, it went on the air, I think, in 74. So this was like the opening of like the third season. And I remember when the Jump the Shark show came on at myself thinking, I'd given up on Happy Days at that point. It just seemed dumb to me. And in retrospect, Happy Days went on all the way to 1984. And I loved Happy Days. And now I realize, God, I only watched Happy Days for like 2.5 years before I gave up on it. Because Happy Days, they say it jumped the shark in 77. Well, that show went off the air 7 years later in like 84. So I was just surprised. You know how you think you spent all this time watching a show when you're younger, and reality, you just watched like a certain, you know, like a year of it, and the rest of them, it just kind of went on. So anyway. So this is the 30th anniversary of the greatest metaphor of all time for TVs.
I think, you know, you hear that phrase fairly frequently now. That is Jump the Shark. Such and such is Jump the Shark. And I think more than half the time I end up disagreeing with their assessment.
Oh, yeah, I agree, too. That's what I like about the website was it was just basically a message board. So it's people like literally like 30 seconds into a series describe it, but they know that people go, no, this is ridiculous. And 90%, I would say more than half the time, I'd say 90% of the time people are just wrong, but it gives them it is kind of fun to debate, you know, did this show go crazy? It's like, I really enjoyed that show Weeds on Showtime. Well, the first season was very, this housewife selling dope and this kind of realistic stuff. And by the next season, it went off into this wilder, wackier territory. But it was actually still great, just totally different. Well, you know, you could definitely say it jumped the shark, but it got better in a lot of ways, too. You know, the guy who invented it, it's this guy named John Hine, created this website. He worked for the people that the Princeton Review that makes the SAT test is like a marketing guy. In his spare time, he's doing Jump the Shark. TV Guide goes and buys the website from him for like $2 million. He quits his job at the Princeton Review, and now he works for the Howard Stern Show. He does this after show host thing. So he's like got the greatest life in the history of, guys. Just created a dumb website and sold it to TV Guide for, millions. He never says how much, but it's pretty clear. It's probably like $2 million.
And that's interesting. And to me, it's like, why would TV Guide do that? Because clearly there's an organization that is rapidly losing its what you know, it published the TV Guide.
Well, it's part of their efforts to diversify. They realized that the TV Guide is going nowhere, so they tried to do the channel. They're trying to be all things to all people, and then they recognized jump the shark was a term and a phrase that had meant something, so they figure, well, we can buy this phrase.
Yeah, but I'm surprised that their business analysis suggested they could recoup more than millions from advertising on it.
Well, I don't think it was the website. I think it was so much because they also... they were like thinking about developing TV shows that they could market, like those VH1 shows. And it was like a
I don't mean just that as their salvation. I just mean in general.
Yeah. And also it's sort of like, not Amazon, but certain other brands bought up certain mini sites, and incorporated them into their site. But, yeah, kind of like Amazon bought IMDb, just sort of looking for the connection. But I agree. I think it was ridiculous. I think he lucked out because he literally made no money on this site, and he would go home and put a couple hours into it each night, and after 3 years, it paid off when somebody bought it from him. Now he doesn't have to do anything. He's not even really associated with it anymore.
So. Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic. I think that'll have to about do it.
Yep, I got a boogie.
You need to scoot, and I think we're done with talking anyway.
Absolutely. Hopefully this all worked out and sounds okay.
So next week I'll have Halo 3 to talk about, and I don't know what else.
Yeah.
So thank you for listening. I am Matt.
I am Richard.
This has been Mustard Mayonnaise.